weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
2017 is the 10th anniversary of WWF's Earth Hour. Over the last decade, this unique display of darkness has become a global phenomenon, with hundreds of millions of individuals coming together each year to show awareness of climate change. This year, Earth Hour is at 8:30 p.m. tomorrow, and I've been speaking to Emily Shakapura, who's the climate scientist and mathematician at the British Antarctic Survey in Cambridge.
So I work at the British Antarctic Survey, which means that I have the privilege of being able to go to the polar regions to do some of my research. I've been a couple of times up to the Arctic and a couple of times down to the Antarctic. They're both places of incredible beauty, but also places where we're really seeing the impacts of climate change. In the Arctic, it's been announced just this week that the Arctic's at its minimum level in terms of sea ice in our satellite records. And in Antarctica too, sea ice is at record minimum levels this year. And we're particularly concerned in both polar regions about the future of the ice sheets in Greenland and in the west of Antarctica. There are vast ice sheets which have the potential to melt back and resulting in significant sea level rise, meters of sea level rise around the world eventually. And that's something that we're particularly concerned about in a warming planet.
And is it one of these things where you see the pictures and perhaps over the course of 12 months there is a period where the polar ice caps form once more, but when they pull back, are they always pulling back to something less than the previous lowest reading?
So that's true in terms of the sea ice. So the sea ice has a seasonal cycle, and in the winter it grows back, and in the summer it melts. So that in the Arctic, the minimum amount of sea ice each year is in September. In the Antarctic, it's obviously the seasons are switched around by 6 months. So the minimum of Antarctic sea ice has just occurred about a week or so ago. In terms of the ice sheets, it's a slightly different story. So the Greenland ice sheet does melt during summer. In Antarctica, the ice sheets are predominantly melted by warm water coming up underneath the ice shelves. And so they sort of melt from below as a result of that warm water. So it's a rather different process. And the concern in Antarctica is that if that warm water encroaches right underneath the ice sheet, then the whole ice sheet could collapse and lift off, resulting in sea level rise.
And do we know over what period of time this began? As there was a point, I don't know, maybe over the past 100 years, when the polar ice caps did start to melt?
In terms of the polar regions, our records don't go back so far. And the sea ice, our best records are from the satellite data, of which we've now got a 38-year history. But if we look more generally at the warming planet, we have much better, longer records. And it's quite clear that we've been seeing, you know, steady warming, certainly over the last 50 years or so. But going back, if we look at the temperature increase from the middle of the 19th century, from 1850 to the present day, then we've warmed just over 1 degree centigrade averaged across the whole planet.
So it's almost the Industrial Revolution onwards to a certain extent, which has caused all of this, or at least sparked it off.
Yes, and of course there's no coincidence there, because, you know, the Industrial Revolution was fueled by our use of fossil fuels, and in large part this increase in temperature has been as a consequence of the carbon dioxide that burning of fossil fuels releases. Mm-hmm. Combined also with our chopping down of forests, which has also had a significant contribution to carbon dioxide levels.
Cambridge has always struck me as a pretty much an eco-friendly place. Do you think we're more or less likely to be aware in Cambridge of what's happening to our planet compared to elsewhere in the country?
I mean, certainly that is my impression. There's some fantastic local groups like Cambridge Carbon Footprint who are really active in terms of, you know, galvanising community action around climate change.
Mm. And in terms of what, it's always tricky with these things, isn't it, as to what the average Cambridge person in the street can actually do to make an impact. Yes, they can switch their lights off for an hour tomorrow for Earth Day, but in the long term, there must be sort of various little bits and pieces that we can do with our everyday life just to make a small amount of difference.
Yes, you know what? I think there's three sort of categories of things that we as individuals can do. The first is, you know, use our voices. That might be through voting, but it can also be through things like signing up for Earth Hour and switching your lights off, which, you know, symbolically it shows that millions of people in this country, you know, hundreds of millions of people around the world, you know, do care about the future of our planet.
We kind of want to reverse spike in the national grid, don't we? In the days during sort of major plot developments in Coronation Street, there'd always be a spike in the electricity supply during the commercial break. We want the reverse of that, don't we, tomorrow?
Yes, it's just symbolic, but the symbolism is really important. You know, I think it is important to show that, you know, there's so much we can do as individuals in terms of modifying our own behaviour. But it's also important that we call on businesses and governments to do things at a global scale.
Mm. And there's a couple of other points I think you had to make on that as well before I, as always, interrupted.
The other couple of things that that I think that people can do, the second thing is indeed changing their behaviour. And I think what's really critical there is doing so in a way that you can then show some leadership and encourage others to change their behaviour as well. There's lots of things that one can do just on a small scale that have a climate benefit but also have all sorts of other benefits. So, for example, Cambridge is very flat. We see lots and lots of people cycling around Cambridge. I have one of those big bicycles that I, with a box on front, that I put my two children in to cycle them off to nursery and back. And so, you know, obviously that saves on the pollution coming from driving. It also keeps me in shape, and the children love it. You know, we go off and say hello to the ducks on the way to nursery. It's much better improvement in their life compared to driving. And similarly, there are plenty of other things that we can do in our daily lives that either save us money and help the climate, maybe insulating your homes, for example, or indeed other activities that would lead to increase in jobs. And that comes onto the third category, where I think particularly people in Cambridge can contribute, which is that, you know, at the end of the day, the key to solving the climate challenge is harnessing human creativity in terms of developing new technologies or new social solutions to climate change. And, you know, there is so much great innovation that goes on in Cambridge that I think that individuals getting involved in that side of things is also critically important.
And Emily, lots of buildings are going to be switching off around the UK tomorrow as part of this as symbolic Earth Hour. Do we know if any buildings in Cambridge are going to be doing that?
Yes, absolutely. The Lion Yard Shopping Centre has committed to switching their lights off, but there's also local groups that are also committed. So Abbey Meadows School has, and the 38 Cambridge Guides have also committed to taking part in Earth Hour.